offered during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
Today we'll discuss the Defense Department's contracting out policies with Congressman John Sarbanes, AFGE's defamation suit against the Treasury Union with General Counsel David Borer, AFGE's success against pay-for-performance models with Defense Conference Chair Don Hale, and the Union Sportsmen's Alliance Boots on the Ground campaign with National Events Director Nate Whiteman. Up first, Congressman John Sarbanes from Maryland. Congressman, welcome back.
Thanks very much.
Now, House Republicans recently voted against your amendment to ensure the Defense Department meets a minimum standard of accounting for many of its contracts. What happened here?
Well, of course, what I was trying to do was keep the current law in place. As you probably know, back in 2008, the Defense Authorization Act had instructed the Department of Defense to start maintaining an inventory of all of its services contracts. And this, frankly, came on the heels of a recognition that there was a lot of privatizing going on, a lot of outsourcing, but nobody was really keeping track of what was happening with that. And there was a strong feeling in the Congress that there needed to be more accountability. So back in 08, that provision was put in place to say you've got to maintain this inventory, but the Department of Defense didn't make the kind of progress on that we hoped to see. So then in 2010, we strengthened that and put a provision in which is currently law, which says that the Department of Defense has to halt all privatizations, you know, sort of new privatizing activity and outsourcing, until they can certify to Congress that they've done a comprehensive inventory, that they've developed it, reviewed it, integrated it into the budget process, and so forth. The Army's made some progress on that, but even they haven't fully integrated it. So we feel that that requirement ought to stay in place so that we know what kind of outsourcing has happened before we do more of it. My amendment would have kept the current law because the bill that was put forward by the Republican House last week actually removed this requirement. So we were trying to get that requirement to be maintained. Unfortunately, my amendment did not pass. So the current version of the Defense Authorization Act that the Republican Congress on the House side passed last week has now removed that, which we think is a mistake.
Did you get any sort of feedback from your Republican colleagues as to why this happened?
Well, in fact, there was about 13 or 14, I think, Republican members who did support the amendment. So they saw that we ought to keep this requirement in place because, frankly, it's just about good government. I mean, that's what this is about. We're not saying there shouldn't be any privatization. We're not saying there shouldn't be any outsourcing. But we think we ought to have good information in making those decisions going forward. And a baseline inventory, obviously, is the first step in that. So I think some Republican members of Congress saw the wisdom of that, but only a handful. The great majority voted to change the current law, and they voted against our amendment, which would have kept that in place. They didn't really offer up, in the debate we had on the House floor, they didn't really offer up a cogent argument for this. I think it was just a kind of reflex reaction against the Democratic amendment.
And what are the consequences now going forward?
The Senate, of course, is going to have their own version of the Defense Authorization Act. My expectation would be that what comes out of the Senate would be a bill that includes the current requirement that the Department of Defense do this kind of inventory before it can do any additional privatizing. And then there'll be a conference committee to reconcile the two bills. My hope would be that we can keep current law in place, that the eventual bill that will be cobbled together from the two chambers will preserve current law, and that will insist going forward that this kind of inventory be conducted. Frankly, I can't understand why this isn't a very bipartisan approach, because, like I said, it's about good government. It's about spending taxpayer money in a wise and efficient way. That's what getting good information is all about. I hope that that way of thinking will prevail in the final version of the bill. We'll just have to see. If it doesn't, if this is removed, then it would allow the Department of Defense to go back to a situation where they can conduct these outsourcing activities and privatization without having good information at their fingertips about whether that makes sense. And I think that would be a mistake, of course.
Congressman, it seems troubling that DOD wasn't really accounting for some of these contracts, this inventory that they had.
I sat on the Oversight and Government Reform Committee for 2 years, during the last 2 years of the Bush administration. And we looked at many, many instances where there had been these contracts put out to private contractors. In many instances, these were services that federal employees were very well positioned to perform and had performed well in the past. Of course, the argument was being made that you could do this more efficiently with private contractors, that you could save money and so forth. The evidence suggested the opposite in many instances, that in fact, when you put these things outside of the agency, when you privatized these functions, that not only was the work done, you know, that it wasn't done better or more efficiently, and in addition, the cost actually went up in some instances. So that was what created this demand on the part of the Congress that the Department of Defense conduct this kind of inventory to see exactly whether costs were being saved, whether services were being performed better, and so forth. We don't think there should be any additional privatizing going on until that analysis is done and that information is at the department's fingertips. That's what this requirement is all about. I hope we can keep the law in place that does that.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Congressman John Sarbanes about contracting out policies at the Department of Defense. Congressman, what are some of the services here that need accounting for?
Well, it goes across the board. I mean, it can be a contract for, you know, performing some basic operational service within an agency, a cleaning contract, you know, that gets put out to bid instead of being conducted inside the agency. You can have that on one hand. You can have a very sophisticated contract relating to intelligence gathering, for example, that could be contracted out instead of having that service performed by the agency. It could be security services. When I was on Oversight and Government Reform, we were looking at many instances in terms of contracting with the war in Iraq where services were being put out to private contractors, again, on the argument that it could be done more efficiently. And then you come to find out that their costs are way above what should have been done. So it's the full range of service contracts that you might envision. But more importantly here, it's a theme, it's a concept. And the concept is, in my view, that many of these functions, many of these services can be performed very well by our federal workforce that has the talent and the skill set to do that, has been doing it for many years. And I think what happened was you got an ideological agenda at work that said, let's push this stuff into the private sector. And it was done without thinking about whether it actually made sense and whether it actually did save money. That's why you got to do an inventory. That's why you need to know what you're already doing before you do any additional contracting of this kind. That's all we're asking. That's what good government's all about. That's what, you know, doing right by the taxpayers of the country is all about. And frankly, that's what doing right by our federal workforce is all about. We come to work every day determined to do the best job they can. and I think are in a position to prove that they do that job well.
Congressman, you mentioned that about 13 or 14 Republican colleagues of yours were with you on this. Do you think that you can rally up a little bit more support to get people understanding the valuable work that these federal employees do better and more economically?
I think we can. We're certainly going to continue to try. We are in a tough environment these days, obviously, with the economy and the demand, the call out there for finding savings wherever we can. That's led to a lot of proposals to kind of cut back on the budgets of these federal agencies. And I think we got to be very careful about that, because you can cut off your nose to spite your face. If you make these cuts, you can find out later on that you're actually going to increase your costs because the functions aren't being conducted in an efficient way. So we have to be very careful as we look at the federal budget on where we find these savings. But again, when it comes to this contracting issue, you know, it could turn out that if you do the inventory properly, you'd conclude that bringing a contract back in or not privatizing something that you were getting ready to privatize is actually the most cost-effective thing to do. And so ideology should not be driving this discussion. Common sense should. And I think if we make that point, we will have more adherence from both sides of the aisle.
Congressman John Sarbanes from Maryland. Congressman, thank you so much for your time and your insight on this today.
Thanks very much. Take care.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll talk with AFGE General Counsel David Bohr about AFGE's defamation lawsuit against the Treasury.
Attention AFGE members, government and military employees. Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by David Bohr, AFGE General Counsel. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
AFGE recently filed a lawsuit against the Treasury Union, who was competing against AFGE for the right to represent transportation security officers. David, tell us about the lawsuit.
Well, the lawsuit is fairly simple. We're alleging that NTEU defamed AFGE with false statements about this great union.
In the lawsuit, there are a couple of key points. Talk about those key points that center around financial issues as well as representation.
Well, there are two key points to the lawsuit. One is that, and this is what really sort of was the straw that broke the camel's back, they put out a flyer that said AFGE collects $3.4 million in dues and provides no representation to TSOs. And that is just a blatant lie. AFGE has represented thousands of TSOs. We've filed 20 lawsuits on behalf of TSOs. We've handled hundreds of EEO cases on behalf of TSOs. And we've handled hundreds of DRB appeals, the Disciplinary Review Board, where we've actually won TSOs' jobs back. And ultimately, in all these cases, if you add it up, we've won over $1 million in back pay for TSOs. So to say that we don't provide representation is just a flat-out lie.
This has been something that has been building for quite some time, correct?
Right. Earlier in the campaign, they went around the country saying, well, AFGE is broke. And that's simply not true either. They read a portion of a balance sheet and they make wild accusations as a result. The fact is AFGE has a building that's worth over $20 million. We have over $20 million in the bank. We have annual receipts in the millions of dollars. And our current liabilities do not outweigh our assets. So they're using every tactic they can think of to try to win this campaign, apparently even if it means lying.
Do you think that they're trying to get away from what the real issue is?
Well, certainly. They know that we're the biggest union in this election. We're the strongest union in this election. We have the best track record in this election. So what are they going to talk about? They're going to make things up that try to damage our reputation and try to confuse the TSOs. And quite frankly, the TSOs aren't buying it. You know, certainly we get a few questions from now and then, what about this? But when we give them the facts, the TSOs understand what's going on here.
That's a great point. And David, you've traveled the country on behalf of this campaign. What are TSOs saying to you about NTEU's tactics?
Well, frankly, they're sort of bored with the nonsense, if you want to know the truth. What TSOs care about are things like eliminating PASS, the pay-for-performance system. And, of course, that's another example where AFGE's record far surpasses NTEU's. We eliminated virtually the same system for 200,000 Department of Defense employees. And NTEU's approach is normally to sort of negotiate around the edges of a pay-for-performance system, but not eliminate it. And we've heard loud and clear from TSOs what they want to do is eliminate PASS and go into the GS system, and that's what we're working on. That's the kind of thing that TSOs care about.
So AFGE is really focused on the issues in this campaign and why they really are the best union choice for transportation security officers.
That's what it's all about. You know, we're asking people to vote. This is an historic election. It's one of the biggest elections in the last 70 years. And we're asking people to make a choice. Who's the best union to represent TSOs? And so TSOs aren't going to cast that sort of historic vote based on the kind of nonsense that NTEU is throwing into the debate. They're going to cast that vote based on tough issues like what to do about PASS, what to do about scheduling, what to do about leave restrictions, and so forth. And those are the kind of issues we've tried to address throughout this campaign and we'll continue to address once we win.
On the subject of PASS, why is it such a big issue for TSOs? They obviously recognize that it's a problem. Can you talk a little bit about why it's problematic for them?
Well, it's pretty simple. One, it leads to favoritism. We've seen that all over the country. And two, it's essentially been a complicated way to keep wages down in this agency. If they were under the GS scale, they would simply make more money, as they ought to when compared to their counterparts in other agencies that are under the GS scale. So that's the bottom line, basically. It's unfair, and it unfairly suppresses wages.
You mentioned that this PASS system keeps wages down, and TSOs have been down for quite a while. They've been kicked around in the press. They work in an agency that doesn't receive high marks in its evaluations of how it treats its employees. Do you think it's about time that TSOs have something they can stand up for and believe in and make their own?
I absolutely do. I think as I go around the country and talk with TSOs, they're looking for somebody to give them a little bit of hope. They've been, frankly, in a system where the managers have been incredibly abusive. They take a lot of abuse from the traveling public. They're now faced with states trying to pass laws that would criminalize the pat-downs that they're forced to do under TSA policy. You know, just showing up at work is a real challenge for these folks, and we need to do a better job. The country needs to do a better job of treating these people properly as employees and as frankly a key link in the security of commercial air travel in this country.
they really are on the front lines of security, aren't they? I mean, they're the ones who interact with airline passengers every day before they get on an airplane.
Absolutely. And if we remember back to 9/11 and the reason TSA was created, those contractors didn't even slow down the terrorists that went through security on the morning of 9/11. And we've been quite effective. The TSOs have been remarkably effective in keeping the air travel system safe since TSA was created, even despite the kind of abuse they take from both management and the traveling public. These are dedicated safety and security professionals. They deserve to be recognized as such.
So what are the next steps, first for AFGE in this campaign to represent TSOs, but also in the litigation that's come up recently?
Well, the next step in the big picture is voting starts next week on May 23rd. And, you know, we're out all around the country talking with TSOs. We're in the middle right now of a signature campaign where we're asking TSOs to sign on to a letter that will go to President Obama and to Administrator Pistol, calling for an end to the PASS, pay for performance system. And then with regard to the lawsuit, we filed the complaint. Now the NTEU has a period of time to respond, and that's going to, you know, continue to play out. We frankly would expect their lawyers to advise their organizers at this point that they need to back off the lies and let's have a fair election.
David Bohr, AFGE General Counsel, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next we'll discuss AFGE's ability to fight back against pay-for-performance models with Defense Conference Chair Don Hale.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Don Hale, AFGE's Defense Conference Chair. Don, welcome back to the program.
Thank you and good morning.
Good morning. Now, as you know, Don, AFGE is in the midst of a union election to be the exclusive representative of transportation security officers. The TSOs have strongly indicated their unhappiness with TSA's pay-for-performance model, also known as PASS. Now, in your experience in beating back the National Security Personnel System, what makes AFGE the only union capable of defeating something like PASS?
Well, there's actually, I believe, a couple reasons. First and foremost, I believe that AFGE is the best union of providing the appropriate Congress people and the American public the facts. And the facts about PASS are similar to the facts about NSPS. It's a personnel system that obviates just basic worker rights for no reason. It's not a national security issue. It's for management to have complete control over employees. The second reason is AFGE's ability to engage in a grassroots mobilization campaign to educate its members and to put pressure on Congress, again, so that they understand what the truth is. That's what we did with NSPS. We were relentless. There wasn't a place where we went or an interview that we gave that we didn't disclose just the atrocities of a personnel system that was put out there for no other reason except to give people more power and more control over a workforce. Took a long time. I mean, we battled NSPS for over 6 years, but we never gave up, and we're not going to give up helping the TSOs beat back path.
Don, you mentioned that one of the arguments in favor of the National Security Personnel System was that it was somehow enhance national security, something that AFGE strongly disagreed with. And in the same way that AFGE would disagree that having pass in place is for enhanced security, talk about the fight that you had to take on to beat back those claims that somehow security was at stake with these pay-for-performance models.
I gave an example early on during NSPS when we were voicing our opposition. It's a very simple scenario. Under NSPS, what Department of Defense wanted to do was to be able to tell a single mother of two children, one of them possibly handicapped, that she needs to be deployed to Iraq. Now, this single mother of two children just happens to be an employee that works in a mess hall, for instance. Under national security, this country is going to go down if we don't take that mother away from those two children. And this is how NSPS went. That individual would have 72 hours to make a decision on whether or not they'd be willing to deploy to Iraq. 72 hours. And their only other option, they'd be terminated. Now, there wasn't a member of Congress or a member of DOD that could convince me that that was being done for national security. As a matter of fact, in most cases, they shook their head and said, well, that's not what we believe the intent of this was. And our argument was it may not have been your intent, but this is what the law says DOD is able to do. The same thing in PATH. You have to have the ability for people to be able to file grievances, to go to a third party, to be treated with dignity. We don't want our employees to get a free ride. We don't want our employees not to be held accountable. We don't want our employees not to actively engage in accomplishing the mission. But not for nothing. What's gone wrong in this country with our Department of Defense or our transportation security? I mean, we don't have issues. We don't have boats sinking in the water, planes falling out of the skies. I mean, so what they're trying to do instead of enhancing security at our airports is to put the burden on employees. It just makes absolutely no sense. And I would give my word to every TSO out there that DEFCON and DOD is going to be by your side the whole way through this, and we will get through it. As many of the TSOs helped us in our fight with NSPS, we're going to be there for them.
Don, how would you respond to critics that say PASS just can't be defeated?
Well, that's what they said about NSPS. And again, it's about educating the American public and members of Congress of the unnecessary reasonings for that type of draconian personnel system. It just makes no sense. And down the road, if we don't get rid of PASS, it's going to demoralize that workforce. It's going to be a revolving door type of agency where you have employees coming and going. How could that be a benefit for national security? You want them people there. You want the security of having longtime employees that, once again, like all of us, has raised their hand and taken an oath to defend this country and our Constitution. We just need to keep driving home the facts and the unnecessary reasonings why this personnel system is being put on those employees.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE DEFCON Chair Don Hale about pay-for-performance models. Don, as we move forward and TSOs are in the midst of this union election, what do you say to them? What advice do you give them when they look at a pay-for-performance model like PASS and remain unhappy with it?
That you can't duck your head in the sand. That the only way PASS is going to be eliminated is if we fight it together. If you believe it's not going to go away, then your employment life is going to be frustrated. We've shown that we can defeat this type of legislation. We've shown it in the past. We not only have, again, activists like myself and throughout our federation that are being engaged in this, but we've got attorneys and lobbyists, experts in how to deal with this situation. I would say this: if there's one union that can defeat PASS, it is AFGE, and we have a track record of doing so. Nobody else defeated NSPS. Oh, we had some smaller unions help us out, but it was driven by AFGE. With a biggest dog in the yard, and we got the biggest bark. And with us all barking together, we'll get rid of this thing.
Don, shifting gears for a minute, the last time that we had you on the program, AFGE had just pulled out of talks with DOD on design teams for personnel system changes. What's the latest with that?
Well, there's a process that's running its course, and we have filed an unfair labor practice against the Air Force with hopes that the Federal Labor Relations Authority will issue a complaint against the Air Force, which would allow our activists to rejoin those design teams, and we can reengage in our participation. All the information, the pertinent documentation, was sent to the regional director. It'll be 2 weeks this coming Friday. So we're hoping to have a decision relatively soon, and hopefully it'll be a favorable decision. And we'll get back and finish that important work being done by those design teams. But we remain firm in our stance that we stand by every one of our activists, every one of them, and there isn't anything too big that we're going to kick one of our own to the curb. And I say that because it's important for TSOs to understand that. We're going to be by them. It's a matter of principle. It's a matter of unity, and that's what we're about. So we're going to stick with staying out of these design teams until the FLRA rules, and irregardless of the ruling, we'll be back. If we lose the FLRA decision, we're not going to take our ball and run home. We wanted our case to be heard by a third party, and that's what's going to happen, and we'll live by that decision, not like what Department of Defense has shown they're willing to do, by the way.
And so you're really here making a strong point that anti-union sentiments will not be tolerated, and you'll stand up for the workers accordingly.
Absolutely, and we have shown that collectively within DOD itself, and more importantly throughout the entire American Federation of Government Employees. Our members stand by one another. We cry with one another, and then we laugh with one another, and we'll continue to do so for, you know, as long as we're out there.
And how did DOD respond to AFGE's decision to withdraw from these design teams?
That's an interesting question. DOD held the company line that they weren't going to get involved in a local command's decision. I totally thought that was the wrong decision to make. There comes a point in time when you have to drive your will downstream, and that didn't happen with DOD. Very disappointing to a lot of us. What will be interesting and more important for the future of labor management relations will be if the FLRA issues a complaint and tells the Air Force to allow our activists to return to the design teams, and the Air Force refuses to comply with that complaint, and now DOD doesn't force Air Force to abide by the law, I would think that our labor management relations would disintegrate rather rapidly.
Don, is there a time frame for the FLRA's decision on this?
This has been expedited, so we really expect a decision pretty soon. We're hoping for a decision this week because the design teams reconvene on June 6th. That may or may not happen, but we think it'll be within just a matter of a couple weeks.
Now, in addition to the issue with the design teams, DOD is also in the middle of a hiring freeze. Is that right?
Well, DOD recently just lifted its hiring freeze, except for this. This just, it makes me laugh. DOD raised the hiring freeze, but individual agencies were still allowed to carry on with the hiring freeze. Department of the Army, for example. Department of the Army, on one command, installation management command, is still holding on to their hiring freeze. So you have many installations. My installation, United States Military Academy at West Point, is one of them. We're about ready to eliminate 111 positions because of a self-imposed hiring freeze. How we're going to get the work done, who knows? 29 of those positions are professor positions that teach our cadets. It makes no sense. I've recently met with our congressional delegation about this self-imposed hiring freeze. It's a backdoor way to contract out work. Sure as I'm sitting here, that's what's going to happen, is because of this hiring freeze and because we have term employees and temp employees that have to be let go because their time has expired, in order to get the work done and accomplish the mission, they're going to have to do service contracts. There's no doubt in my mind this is a backdoor agenda to contract work out without going through an A-76 study. And I'm deeply concerned that if the Army gets away with this, then this thing will just snowball and roll through all the rest of Department of Defense agencies. That's why we've reacted rather swiftly and rather quickly on what our concerns are with our members of Congress.
It sounds like, from what you've described, that this really would impact services provided.
Oh, it certainly would. It certainly would. You know, we have in our Department of Public Works about 80 employees that are not permanent employees. They're not permanent employees because we've been on a hiring freeze for 8 years. 8 years we've had to have special permission to hire permanent employees. So all of our employees are what's designated as term employees. You can only have a term appointment for 4 years. We're losing approximately 40 people on June 18th and then an additional 40 people in October because their term expires. So what happens? You have to bring in either new term employees that you hire. You have to retrain them. In the meantime, stuff doesn't get done. That's not allowed. I don't see that happening. Things have to get done. So their argument, their excuse is going to be, in order to accomplish the mission, we have to go out and sign these service contracts and eliminate these federal positions. We all see it coming.
Don Hale, AFGE Defense Conference Chair. Don, thanks so much for your time. We're going to keep an eye on this going forward.
I thank you, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next we'll learn about the Union Sportsmen's Alliance Boots on the Ground campaign with National Events Director Nate Whiteman.
Some polls say Americans don't trust government, but listen to our members, the real people who work hard for you every day.
I'm Mike Schnobrick, a correctional officer at the Supermax in Florence, Colorado. Trust me, the terrorists are locked down tight.
My name is Janet Winghart, a Social Security claims rep in Fort Lauderdale. Senior citizens can trust me to get them the right check at the right time.
I'm Michelle Reed, a registered nurse at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Trust me, I care for our veterans like family.
My name is Everett Kelly. I work for the Anniston Army Depot, Anniston, Alabama. Trust me, our tanks are tough.
I'm John Gage, president of AFGE. You can trust us. We work for you. Brought to you by AFGE and online at afge.org.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available.
These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Nate Whiteman, the Union Sportsmen's Alliance National Events Director and Director of Recruitment. Nate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
Great. Thank you. Later this month, the Union Sportsmen's Alliance will hold its first annual Philadelphia Area Sporting Clay Shoot on June 25th. Tell us about the event.
The event is at Lehigh's Clay's, station. Basically, it's one of 25 events we're doing this year. Philadelphia area, this will be our first time there. Some of our events were up to our third annual shoots, actually. So it'll be a good time in Philadelphia. Great to get some new people involved.
Nate, educate the audience about what these sporting clay shoots are.
Well, the sporting clay shoots are one of our fundraising mechanisms for the Union Sportsmen's Alliance. Basically, we bring union folks together from about, 150-mile radius of where we hold a regional event. And again, I mentioned there are 25 throughout the country. It's basically to raise funds for the USA and to bring brothers and sisters together from all trades, showing them something that they haven't done before. Sporting clays. Our organization is basically built on hunting and fishing, but we want to make sure that we don't leave anybody that enjoys the outdoors out of anything we do. So it's a great way to be with the members and get them involved.
Talk about how the Union Sportsmen's Alliance came to be and what it was born out of.
Well, if people really don't know, we started with the TRCP. We were a part of the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership. About a year ago, we broke away, had a good breakaway, but it was time for us to go out on our own. Basically, we're a nonprofit, conservation-based hunting and fishing organization for the AFL-CIO union members, retirees, and family members. Our primary function is to expand and improve hunting and fishing access and wildlife habitat through North America.
Let's move back to the sporting clay shoot. Tell us a little bit more about the Philadelphia area shoot coming up.
It's going to be on the 25th. We start registration about 8 o'clock in the morning. We're usually shooting by 9:30 and we're eating lunch and giving away great prizes by about 12:30. It's a fun day. Anybody's invited. We love to have first-time shooters. Surprisingly, most of our shoots, we have a lot of first-time shooters, which is great.
Now, when you're talking about a sporting clay shoot, is this a competitive event? Is this more fun and relaxed? Tell us about that.
You know, it's a mixed bag. We do always have some competitive shooters, but generally we try to make it so everybody has a great time, definitely. We set the targets so that everybody has the ability to make some good shots. We don't set it so easy so that the competitive people, you know, don't have a good day amongst themselves being competitive. But it's not a real competitive event. It's definitely there to have fun. We're raising funds and we're making people aware of what the USA is.
If I remember correctly, Nate, AFGE hosted the USA Sporting Clay Shoot in Anchorage last year, didn't it?
Actually, absolutely, they did. It was great. We arrived in Wasilla, had a great shoot. The international president, John Gage, was there, and it was awesome to have them up there. I think AFG had some sort of a conference or convention that lended the ability for them to be there, and it was wonderful to see them out there.
And where are some other shoots that are going on? You mentioned about 25 others throughout the country this year.
Yeah, I think we're in close to 17 states. Basically started at the beginning of the year in southern Florida. We end up in southern California. In between, we're in Nevada, Kansas, Missouri. We actually have a shoot coming up next weekend in the Washington, D.C. area. Other than Philadelphia, we're also in Pittsburgh, New York, Chicago, both north and southern Illinois. So we're all over the place.
Love that you have here. Talk about the connection between a union brother and sister and the great outdoors.
Well, I think before years ago, before the organization was really open to all union members, we did some sort of a survey. I think there was an actual study done, and it showed that, at least amongst the building trades, that in the high 70% range, union members hunt and or fish. So we felt, you know, this is a no-brainer. There's got to be a unique club or organization for the union members that enjoy the great outdoors, that can put their thumbprint on conservation, rather than being split up by many of the other conservation groups that they are all partially members of, like the Ducks Unlimited, Rocky Mountain Elk Federation, and so on. It came together magically, and here we are. We've got our own club, we've got our own mission, and it's a place where union brothers and sisters can come together. It's no secret that there's a lot of society that is trying to pull unions apart. We feel that we've got a place where everybody feels comfortable. They have the same initiative at hand with conservation and just love to be in the outdoors, and we feel like we're kind of a home for that.
You bring up a good point about it being a tough time to be a union member these days, and a lot of the anti-union sentiment that gets thrown into the political debate. Despite that, have you found that people within your club have really grown their bond even more than before?
I do. Personally, I mean, I'm a union member myself. I'm with the Painters Local 639 here in Cleveland, Ohio, and I'm talking with people that I never would have spoken to before, even possibly on the job site. It's definitely an arena where we have common interests, where we can bond, grow our fellowship, and hopefully grow the union movement and make sure that everybody understands what union means. It's, you know, unity and community. And these people are also not only coming together in the shooting atmosphere, but we've got a program called Boots on the Ground that is actually putting union members to work hand in hand with the DNRs throughout the country to better their own surroundings for hunting and fishing and outdoor activity.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with the Union Sportsmen's Alliance, Nate Whiteman. Nate, you brought up Boots on the Ground. Tell us more about this project.
Boots on the ground, it's what we're going to hang our hat on in the future, and this is what's going to get hopefully hundreds of thousands of members of the union members into the USA. Boots on the Ground is a program that basically uses the expertise and volunteerism that union members live with. It's union is a way of life. It's not a fad. It's not a pastime. It's not a hobby. It's how people live. What we've come up with is a way for union members to get involved with what they're good at, using their skills to help not only their own union members in their own community, but people outside of the union community, to show that unions are good, union skill is needed, and what we can do to help in the great outdoors. We've got projects all over the country that we're embarking on, and if you don't mind, I'll give you one example. What we're doing in Wisconsin is we've got five other trades that sum up seven locals that were they were actually building deer traps. The DNR in Wisconsin needed to do a study. They needed to actually capture some deer safely and study them, whether it be radio collars or what have you. And they reached out to us. We got the manpower. We had the cages built. Everything was donated. And we've got union members putting their skill together, multi-trades, to actually help the DNR in that area launch this study. And then we're doing this stuff all over the country.
Now, Nate, of course, volunteering for anything is great. But talk about how valuable it is to have skilled union workers volunteering for these much-needed projects.
Well, because I'm behind the scenes, there's two factors in it for me. Number one, the skill is just unmatched. I mean, the apprenticeship programs we have across the country, across all the trades, is unmatched by any. So we automatically have the skill set to make any project a positive project. Also, with the volunteerism, You know, these guys and girls do this stuff all the time, and it's never reported. It's never brought to the public's attention that we're doing Habitat for Humanity. Again, I'm a union member myself, so I've been on these projects. It's just in our nature to volunteer and help the community. And again, community and unity is what union means. But also, it sheds a good light on the union. It shows people that we are needed. We are skilled, we have something valuable to offer, and we're willing to do it, regardless of what the media says, regardless what the public perception is. We're out there showing people every day that our skill is needed and we're good for the community.
You mentioned the Deer Project in Wisconsin, but that really is almost the tip of the iceberg on this Boots on the Ground project, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. We've got a coordinator, Jim Klatt, who's out of the Minneapolis, Minnesota area, who's actually traveling to Beaumont, Texas today to help launch a rehab on a historical fish hatchery. It's the Jasper State Fish Hatchery, and it's actually being rewired by the IBEW there, local 479. And we've got actually sheet metal workers from Local 54 are building transportation tanks. This hatchery is actually still running, but it's in dire need of refurbishing, and sure enough, here come our volunteers. They're gonna make this happen. It's gonna be a new place, and it's gonna thrive. And again, it's got historical value. So here are our union brothers and sisters, lending their skill, lending their time to make a positive impact for everybody, not just union fishermen, not just union hunters, every fisherman, every hunter.
I think that's a good point that you made there, that, you know, everyone benefits from this. Anyone who likes to fish, who likes to hunt, stands something to gain by these conservation projects. Talk about the environmental good that's being done here.
Well, it's you think of unions, and especially the construction trades, you wouldn't normally think of them being conservationists. I mean, you know, it's easy. Guys are working if they're building something. And usually if you're building something, you're flattening some ground, you're uprooting trees, you're doing something to some sort of environment that wouldn't be environment friendly. But that's absolutely not the truth. These guys and girls want to work. They want to use their skills, but they also want to do it in a responsible manner so that they can keep the heritage that like I mentioned before, in the high 70s% of these people hunt or fish. The last thing they want to do, just like with unions, the last thing you want to do is you lose a benefit. Well, the last thing they want to do with the hunting and fishing and conservation into this is lose a place to hunt and fish. So they're always aware of this. So union people coming together to work on these projects, be in this club is something that the public needs to be educated on. And I don't think they are, and I hope we're helping do that.
Lastly, Nate, if people want to find out more about the Sporting Clay Shoots or the Boots on the Ground campaign, where can they go?
Absolutely. Go to our website, www.unionsportsman.org. Also, follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/unionsportsman. You can go to the events section. You can look up future events. You can download invitations. And I urge you even to look at past events because there'll be pictures, photos, scores of people. You'll see how much enjoyment these union members are getting out of being part of a club that you can actually touch, feel, and see. We're not just a club that you pay your dues to and I send you a truck sticker. Come out and interact with us. I will hunt and fish with any union member that invites us. We want to be interactive, and we want your participation.
Nate Whiteman, Union Sportsman's Alliance National Events Director and Director of Recruitment. Nate, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to our guests this week, Congressman John Sarbanes, AFGE General Counsel David Bohrer, Defense Conference Chair Don Hale, and Union Sportsman's Alliance National Events Director Nate Whiteman. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. WFED Washington, WW.